What's up, you guys? You're listening to a Velvet's Edge podcast. I had the opportunity this week to interview country music superstar Dierks Bentley. He's also been a client of mine for almost 10 years now. So if you know anything about my history, I have done hair and makeup for about 15 years. It's obviously turned into a lot of different things, styling, now the blog Velvet's Edge, and the podcast. But Dierks has remained a client of mine throughout all of that. He is an amazing boss, but he's also an even better person. And I just wanted you guys to be able to see that side of him. So obviously we talked about music because that's what he's known for, but I wanted to know deeper things like how he got his start, what made him be so persistent in music, and then also what it feels like now that he's reached the level of success that he has. What does that feel like? It's so fascinating to me, just as a seeker and a person chasing things right now. What does it feel like? So we talked about all things life, family, relationships, kids, all of that stuff. I hope you guys enjoy. Here's Dierks.
Okay. Podcast get you in trouble.
What do you mean podcast gets you in trouble?
You just gotta, I never watch what I say, so I never go back and listen to it, but yeah, you just never know what you're gonna.
Is this like the unfiltered Dierks Bentley that we're about to get?
You've had a lot of unfiltered me over the years. A lot of unfiltered. I don't think we're gonna get that unfiltered. That's band level unfiltering that you know about. But
no, best talk,
pretty,
we call it.
Pretty unfiltered. Yeah.
Okay. We'll see what happens.
I do a lot, every interview I do with like newspapers or radio, I never like, there's something off limits, and I usually just say what's ever on my mind, much to my chagrin later on. But yeah, let's dig into it.
This is an interesting,
by the way, podcast wise.
I don't know. Why'd you ask me that?
I feel like I could have been like one.
You could have been number one.
I could have been number one. I could have been your first.
But it was a rough time. You had album release.
Yeah. It was, and the show.
I feel like you also wanted to see.
Well, they wanted to tape us on TV doing this.
For Very Cavalier.
Yeah.
Of course they did. Why wouldn't they?
I don't know.
That's interesting. It's fascinating.
I know. The show is amazing.
Also, did you want to see kind of what the podcast was going to be before signed up?
I feel like,
be honest.
No, well, at the time, I think you had to start with a shot of tequila in your podcast.
Yeah, that was kind of the way we
drinking,
went.
So now I was kind of like,
oh, right.
Break the rules. And then, I don't know, I just, the TV taping thing, the album's coming out. I just kind of was like, yeah, I think I just been in LA doing some, looking at some TV stuff. And I was just kind of like, I don't know. The TV thing probably threw me off.
That was a big one.
Yeah.
We'll get you on Very Cavalier later.
I need to be on the show. I hung out with the other night. We were all hanging out. Jay was at the Whiskey Row. And
what?
After my concert.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Started that was a couple. You can be buddies.
Yeah.
You'll be a soon-to-be reality star, too.
That's right.
I don't think Jay Cutler ever thought he would be one. So, you just never know.
Probably, that's what makes him great, is he just does not fit that mold at all.
No.
Yeah.
When I was Googling... I kind of like to do research because obviously I've known you for almost 10 years.
You got to do research on me?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I know everything about you. I could probably do your interviews for you.
Really could. Yeah. This is actually Kelly speaking for me. She knows my name. She's the only one in the room right now.
But I go back in because I'm like, there's got to be stuff I don't know, or I look for a different angle because I need to know what people would think was interesting about you. And the first thing that comes up, of course, is that your name is really Frederick.
Yeah. Fred.
Did you always go by Dierks, though?
Fred. I always have gone by Dierks. Yeah, my mom named us all, like, we have a family name first. Actually, both my names are family names, but, like, that's my grandfather's name was Frederick, and then our middle name is what we go by. So, my sister's, like, Catherine Vanessa Bentley.
Right.
So, no,
okay.
My brother's Newell. My brother really got the short end of the stick. I thought Fred was bad. My brother's name is Newell.
What is that? How do you spell that?
N-E-W-E-L-L.
Newell?
My grandfather's name, too.
Wow.
So,
but he goes by Fife.
He goes by Fife, that's my dad's family name. So
that's a cool name.
It's pretty messed up, yeah.
But Fred Bentley
Fred.
Does not have the same ring to
Fred, when I retire, you know, I want to go off and hide out and be unknown and obscure. I'll pick up Fred, maybe.
Fred in the mountains. I could see that.
Freddie D.
Yeah. Okay, so obviously people mostly know you for country music, so we have to talk a little bit about that. I do want to know, like, I'm not going to break down every song or album or anything like that, because you can just Google that.
Okay.
But will you tell people a little bit about how you got your start?
Yeah. Where do I start with? You know, I listen to country music with my dad, but what I love about country music for me is it's really been like my own journey. My dad listened to it, and we loved listening to it together in the car, and it was always kind of his music, and I didn't mind it. I liked it because my dad liked it, but it wasn't really like my necessarily like my thing. And when I turned 13 and discovered the electric guitar, it definitely wasn't my thing. I just didn't listen to any more country music at all. Still liked it because my dad liked it, and it was, you know, kind of like older people's music and all that. And then when I was 17, I went through all sorts of phases too, like between 13 and 17, dove deep into like heavy metal and playing a lot of power chords on an electric guitar. But when I turned 17, I had this moment. I've had a couple of these in my life where it's just, you know, like, I don't know how to describe it, but it'd be like a coin going out of a slot machine and hitting all the right levers, where I just heard this, a friend of mine stopped me and played me this Hank Jr. song, and it just, I knew exactly what I was like, I want to do the rest of my life. It was crazy. It was 17. I remember like sitting down into a chair being like, whoa, that's it. That's the sound that I've been like looking for. And it was so different than my dad's country music. It was Hank Jr., you know, screaming electric guitars, and he's singing about naked women and beer. And I was 17 going, yeah, this is a, I like this a lot.
That
this
sounds
is,
exciting.
This is country music. Wow. I want to do this. And so then I got into like, right. From that moment on, that day, I listened to Marty Stewart's a song called That's Country, and started listening to Dwight Yoakam and Alan Jackson. I mean, just could not get enough of it. And it really continues to this day. I'm always digging deeper for, you know, going back in music. But anyway, so I moved out to Nashville when I was 19. I went to school for a year in Vermont, and I did the best I could to transfer to Vanderbilt. And the same friend that turned me on to country music, he was going to school here. His family had gone to school here, and definitely wrote a good recommendation, helped me get in because my grades were terrible. But I got in. The day I got here, I got a job at the CMA, interning for free, working in the Country Music Association. Worked all over town, temping organizations. I temped everywhere just trying to learn how to make that work, and was all over Lower Broadway listening to bands playing. I was writing songs with people, and it took like 8-9 years. It's a long story, but I had a gig down Lower Broadway. It's such a long story, but you know, let's just say after like 8 to 9 years of moving here, I got a publishing deal, and that led to a record deal. But
so it started with publishing.
Yeah.
So once you decided this is what I want to do, though, do you think, because you talked about the mailroom, I feel like you've told me a story where you used to be an extra in videos. Like,
oh my gosh,
you were just trying to be around it as much as possible, right?
Yeah. I mean, I have a plaque on that wall that I've had since I was about 17. It's a quote from Herbert Hoover, the president. But it's about nothing takes the place of persistence or determination, right? Like, you can be, education won't, talent won't, genius won't, persistence and determination are omnipotent. And it just talks about how that's been my whole thing. It's just like, there's a lot better singers than me out there, a lot better songwriters out there than me. And I think everyone in this town is a better guitar player than me, but I worked harder. You know, I'm not saying that's the reason why, and I got lucky, but you know, I bought a PA system. I'd play backyard barbecues and crawfish boils and tailgate parties and weddings, and so many times without a PA, just playing against the wall. No one's even, we're just blended in with the wallpaper. And I was also working, trying to make money. So I was a PA on, I worked for the National Network and for CMT, and I was one of the people backstage at the award shows with the headset mic on. And, I worked a terrible reality TV show, where these like three girls try to get one guy. No, this is not like yours. Yours is good. This one was bad. It was so bad. It was like this, three girls were competing for this one guy. I can't think of the name, like Eliminate or something like that.
So yeah, like a bad version of The Bachelor.
Like a Tennessee version. Yeah. Shot down in Antioch.
Oh, man.
LA version of The Bachelor. Not Los Angeles, but lower Antioch version of this thing. And, yeah, it was just the way the guy was talking to the girls was so, it was just maybe uncomfortable. And I had to walk off the set. I missed out on my $100 payday that day. But yeah, I've had all sorts of crazy jobs. I'm just trying to kind of stay in the game long enough to, you know, to get my craft going.
That is kind of how Nashville works, or that's how it's been for me too. It's once you get in and just get around it, you meet one person, and then that person connects you to another.
Yeah. And it's the greatest lesson. And like, this door closes in your face that you think's like the one that was meant to be. You know, I remember playing the Bluebird, and so-and-so was supposed to show up, and it wasn't these Bluebird gigs. You have to audition for them. The Monday night ones, you have to audition for them. And then they gave you a letter saying, hey, in 6 months, you can, if you made it,
oh my
you
God,
can play.
6 months?
You had to wait like 6 months. It was crazy. And I did. And it's my big night down there, and this guy didn't show up. And it's like, oh, well, there goes my whole career. You know, it's like, you learn like that. There's just, you have to keep staying around, meeting people. And for me, it wasn't so much about like, a work thing or a business thing. It's just because I love doing it. I love being on Lower Broadway listening to bands. I love, you know, being over to ASCAP and writing songs with my fellow unsigned writers. And I love being around the business when I was temping for Randstad, a staffing organization. So it was just, you know, I never really was worried or anything because I didn't know anything what else to do. And I was really loved what I was doing and felt like I was, you know, there's obviously low moments, but I feel like I was like in Nashville, Tennessee, you know, it was fun. I was in the
just
hunt.
Living.
Yeah. Living.
So would you, if someone, I'm sure you get asked this question a ton, but if you were going to say, what's the key been to your success? It's just obviously persistence.
Yeah. Do it for the right reasons, obviously.
What do you mean by that?
I was talking to my daughter the other day. It's like sing because you love to sing, you know.
Not because you want to be famous.
Be a front house engineer because you love mixing songs. Be a modern engineer because you love being close to the stage and working with bands. I mean, whatever you're doing, make sure you're doing it because you love to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, then you'll be able to do it forever. You know, I was down on Lower Broadway and I was there when Joe Nichols got signed and I'm still playing the bars and I was kind of bummed because I'm waiting for my shot, but... Well, I got another set, so here we go. It's fun. You know, I loved what I was doing. And if you have that love, it makes the persistence and the determination a lot easier, you know, because I just really love what you're doing.
Was there any one person that taught you that, or did you look at anyone else's career and see them doing that, or you just naturally did that?
I credit everything just to a crazy just love of country music. I just love it. And when I moved down here, I moved here not to be a star. I moved here to find the source of this thing that I love so much. And I remember getting here and being on Music Row and seeing everyone kind of dressed like Garth Brooks. And I don't dress that way and kind of be like, dang, I don't really dress that way, but I love this music, but I don't really wear the starched Wranglers and the, you know, the
starched Wranglers.
Yeah, oh, everyone, the line down the front.
Oh my God, I remember.
Line down the front of the Wranglers. You had that line pressed right in there and the belt buckles. It was kind of like a Garth, you know, not to say everyone was trying to be like Garth, but it was kind of like he was having that huge moment.
Right.
That was the look, man. And I was like, that's not me. But then I found out people weren't writing their own songs. And that was such a revelation to me. I'm like, what? Like, I'm looking for like this authentic like genre of music and the source of this river of music that I love so much. And like these kind of like, it feels like people are kind of dressed in a certain way because that's what they're supposed to do. Maybe they're writing these songs because they're not writing songs. And which I, you know, I have total respect now for songwriters in the community, but at the time I thought I just didn't realize that's how it worked, and so it kind of put me off. So for me, I feel lucky that I had this like inner kind of muse guiding me towards trying to find this authentic thing, which I found in bluegrass the same year I moved down here. 94? No, I guess I've had that in like 95. So within like a year or two being down here, I discovered the station in and kind of found what I was looking for. And so I guess those people kind of taught me about doing it for the love of doing it, because that's why you don't play bluegrass to make money.
Right.
You know?
It's not the commercial success
no,
that you would
do
see
it
elsewhere.
You just love, as they would say, picking and singing.
Right. Let's talk about what makes a good song, because I do think it's like you get this record deal, you get this publishing deal, and then all of a sudden, like the real work actually starts too. Like that's not the end of the road. So
yeah,
you have to create all these amazing songs. Why do you think certain songs work and certain ones don't? Because we've always talked about this. The ones that I like on your album don't do well on radio.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that, because that's like that the song "The Mountain." You know, it talks about, you know, when you think you get to the top, there's always another peak. I mean, this whole business is all about like you get to the top of one thing and then you start all over again, right?
Yeah.
You know, you get a publishing deal and it's like, oh, I'm at ground zero. Then you get a record deal, I'm at ground zero. You headline your first gig at a club and it's like, oh, there's bigger venues like theaters and eventually arenas. So it's all about just like constantly looking, you know, climbing. But that's the thing that makes it music, you know, songs. You try to, like, when I make a record and then someone asks me about it, it's like, it's called music. It's not math. I can't describe the record to you. You have to listen to it, internalize it, and you tell me what you think. If I could just like, you know, quantify it, it'd be a totally different, it wouldn't be music. So it's like, what makes a hit song so special? Because nobody knows. It's
right.
Like the stock market or something. It's like, you can't, I mean, I keep hearing like about technology that's like coming along. It's going to actually like be able to like predict a hit song based on like some sort of crazy algorithm or something, which sounds so like unsexy. That's terrible, right? Like this computer is deciding what you need to listen to, but I'm sure it's probably already happening. But I think that's what's so cool about songs is nobody knows. And the song they think's like really slow and you look like Strawberry Wine for, you know, Deanna Carter. It's like, this song will never work.
Right.
It's a massive hit, or you just never know. It's just so cool about songs. But what I have learned, you know, we were just talking earlier about people not writing their own music. About three albums in, I really should have started like leaning on the Nashville songwriting community a lot more than I was, because I was trying to write everything. And I don't know if you can pick hits, you know, it's not a guaranteed, but you're gonna have a lot better chance of success, you know, picking songs from writers that are doing it every day. You know, their pencils are sharp, they got their ear to the, you know, nose to the grindstone, they're listening to the pulse, they got their finger on the pulse of Nashville and what's working. So definitely rely heavily on those folks, whether co-writing or just, you know, using their songs. They have the best idea of what a hit is, because I don't. The songs of mine that are hits, I didn't think were hits until they became hits. You know, like Drunk on a Plane.
Like, yeah.
So many people thought that song was going to tank.
And me, I did. Yeah, yeah.
My buddy Jaron Johnson, he's like, rednecks don't fly. That song's never going to work. And even guys,
it's like your biggest song, right?
I know, it's pretty big.
Do you get super attached? I've heard, I mean, I could answer this question for you. This is one of them you get asked a lot. But how do you just throw a song out there and not get super attached to people loving it or it being a number one song? Or
yeah.
Does that matter? Do your feelings get hurt if it's not? Like, what does that feel like?
Yeah. It's a great question. I mean, like, you know, the very first single I put out, what was I thinking? You know, the day it got released, I just done like a 90 radio station visit over 4 months, and my hometown stations didn't add the song, right, in Phoenix. And I was like, I was angry. I was pissed off. I'm like, what? You know, I didn't really understand the business of it at the time. And now I really don't take offense to someone adding or not adding the song, because there's so many other factors involved. And you know, I've been luckier than most. I get to work with a great record label, and I get a better shot than most do, I think, and being a guy too. Better shot than most of having a song, have a chance of having success, but I don't take anything personally at all when it comes to like a song being played or not being played anymore. And maybe I can say that because I've had some success to kind of lean back on. But it's not. You know, it was really personal for me was that movie, Only the Brave. I had a song in that movie. That movie, like, I want to ask Josh Brolin, like, how do you move on from a movie? Because that movie didn't do very well.
Which is crazy because it's so good.
I was so invested in that movie.
I know, me too.
That song, the movie, it came out in papers that like it, you know, hadn't done well. And I was like, it still hurts me now. I mean, I just actually was wearing a bracelet that I just took off yesterday about those 19 hotshot firefighters. I still keep in touch with a lot of those families. And so that movie, like, that hurt that movie didn't do as well. It had nothing to do with my personal success. I was just like all in on this story,
right,
and this movie. It's so personal to me and to the people I know. And like, you know, I don't know how it's doing on demand or you know, secondary markets, but that crushed me. I don't know how actors move on from like a project like that, because it would hurt too. I guess, you know, I've been lucky. All my albums have done pretty well. If The Mountain had not done well, that would have like really hurt overall. Like
that was a really personal album.
Yeah,
that would
be like, you know.
Yeah.
But as far as like things that you can't control, I mean, like award shows and
I was going to bring
songs,
that up.
Yeah, you can't control that stuff. So you drive yourself crazy, and it's just kind of a dumb thing to focus on.
So you just feel like, I mean, let's just be honest. You're basically the Susan Lucci of country music.
I am. At least I wouldn't even know who she was if she hadn't lost, never won.
There you go.
Yeah, so
put you on people's radar.
I think of the one award I have, I got the Flameworthy Award that Jake won in 2003 for best appearance in I got my Red Rocks. I don't really have a lot of like awards around because I haven't won many, I guess. No, I've won a few things, but not a lot.
Do you not get disappointed? I mean, or how much does that weigh into your validation that you're doing something right?
If you win, it validates your entire career, right?
Right.
If you lose, it's all politics. That's the healthiest way to look at it. No, this sounds like such a stock answer, but if you just think about it for a second, it's a kind of a bizarre thing, like voting on a song, and you know all the stuff that we all know, the stuff that goes on, like, hey, so these people are voting for this, so we're going to vote for this person. A lot of block voting happens and whatnot. I mean, if you win, it's awesome to win, and the people that win are totally deserving, and they should be, and it's awesome, and just to be in that room and to be nominated is crazy awesome. As far as validation goes, I mean, you got a microphone on stage every night, and people spend all this money to come out and see
That's
you.
True.
I mean, like, think about the money that goes into coming and seeing a show. I look out there, I don't like to see a mass of people. I see like individual people, and I know from personal experience going to a show what a pain it is, and like you gotta get a babysitter and the money and the parking and the t-shirts and the drinks and $8 beers. And it's like that's pretty good validation that you're doing something that's right. True. That someone gets off their butt and comes see you. You know,
that you get every weekend.
I get every weekend, and like, there's people come through town that I love, and I'm like, oh man, it's 9:30. Yeah, it's sad. I don't think so.
Right.
So for someone to come out and see your show is like the ultimate validation to me.
Do you feel like that helps you? Because I feel like you still have this passion for the music aspect of it, but this is a business.
Yeah.
So do you feel like that helps you if you ever get bogged down with just like losing that passion?
Totally.
And it's just a job?
Oh, man, I never, the day that it feels like it's just a job, I would like, I'd be done so fast. So I would say like, be like a NASCAR driver that's just like kind of out there so other people can go around them. You know, it's like, I have no desire in doing that. I would definitely just hang it up because that's just a waste of everybody's time. And that's like, that's not good for me, not good for my band, not good for the fans, you know? So for me, and I talk to the guys in the band about it all the time, it's like every night feels like I'm learning something new. You know, I'm learning something new physically about the way I'm moving. You know, I don't know a lot of dance moves or anything, but like just the way I interpret a song.
One.
I have the one move. I got the, well, if you count the Hot Country Nights, I have a lot, but Doug has a lot more moves than I do. But, you know, just finding a way a song makes you move physically on stage, the way I sing something, the way I find a new way to connect with somebody. And I always feel like every show is just a little bit, I don't want to say better, but it's there's more growth with every show. And I talk to the guys in the band, and you know, they might not be like up front singing every song, but they're trying things behind me. They're going for stuff. They're engaged. And that is, it can never just feel like a show. Like, we're not out there to go put on a show. It's like, it has to be some sort of like growth, learning process, and has to be some goal of getting better. Not necessarily getting bigger and playing bigger shows and having more people come out, which is always awesome. And but just the main focus is just like always being a student. I'm a student of lead singers and how to be the best lead singer and how to interpret my songs, old songs, how to make them feel current, how to make them connect to people, you know, what to say leading into them, where to physically go on stage, maybe leave the stage, maybe bring somebody up on stage. So it's just, that is what makes it interesting and fun and keeps me moving on. And, you know, and making albums too. I'm just kind of starting to think about maybe another album, and it's really fun because I feel like you get to kind of adopt a character, you know, you get to go mm-hmm. inside yourself and see like what part of you is like kind of speaking the loudest. And, you know, with Riser, Knox had been born, and that was kind of a new twist. And my album Black Cast, and I've been married for 10 years. That was interesting. And obviously The Mountain was a lot of my energy was going towards thinking about the West and maybe moving out there. And so I'm kind of looking forward to exploring the next thing. But
I was actually going to bring that up next. I feel like your albums, even since I've worked with you, are always pretty attached to where you are in life.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned Knox, but it was also your dad passing, and then
Cass,
and then The Mountain is so much more than just moving out west to me. It's this like,
well, it's this whole like, it's where I'm from, it's
yeah,
where I will be. It's such a big part of who I am. It's
like a analogy. New acceptance I've seen in you too.
Yeah, I feel like with that one too, it's the most comfortable I've been, like, and I feel it's just like the stage, the albums are the same way. It's like getting more and more comfortable trying stuff, going for stuff.
Yeah.
Reaching for songs, you know, I feel like every album has songs that aren't necessarily me to begin with, but they become me, which is kind of a weird thing, but I'm always trying to like grow in that regard too. But yeah, The Mountain feels like the most, definitely, everyone says this, it's the most personal album, but it's definitely the most like, just felt from the top to bottom, like truly, like really extra authentic about, you know, who I am and that side of me that and the way I, not just physically the mountains, the West, but just the song Living, which is kind of the cornerstone of the album, it kind of has like a lot of my current attitude and views on life and my experience in the album. So there's a lot going on there.
How do you feel like you've changed through the years through your career, like what you just mentioned? I mean, it's a totally different mentality. I feel like there was such a striver type, just chasing everything at the beginning. And now you're getting to this place where you've got a whole new level of success. Hmm. So what does that feel like? Like you've worked so hard to get here, and in some ways now you're here. What does that feel like?
Yeah. I mean, I think all my albums and all my career are really closely mirroring like kind of where I am in my personal life. You know, I think that's all a big part of it. I'm not making albums that kind of go back and talk a lot about, I'm trying not to make write songs that kind of tap back into like nostalgia or like the way this, an idea of doing something that this, I don't do anymore. You know, I'm not going to, I'm not going to go, right, what was I thinking again, you know, yeah. Or how am I doing?
I'd hope not.
A lot of leaving left to do. That's so just pissed. Not who I am. But you know what I mean? Like, I even though those are hits, it's like, I got to write songs that reflect like who I am now. And when I get to put a song out that really is a huge hit, but also is like so authentic, like Women and Men, like Burning Man, like Living, these three songs right now, like, that's like almost a joke that they were that stuff that's so 100% me and not necessarily like down the road country radio or country lifestyle at all, that they work is like, that's the best feeling at all. Doing Traveling Light on the ACMs with Brandi Carlile, it's like, I feel like I'm kind of getting to cheat the system a little bit, you know, by getting, I don't have to play the game. I'm at this point, I can kind of put out songs that are like so me and so passionate and important to me and see them work. So that's been, and every album's been kind of a snapshot of where I am. And I feel like now I'm just in a, you know, I'm really, there's a lot of wisdom that comes, and for me has come in my 40s, and I feel like I'm getting a chance to apply that with a more, in a more brave way on these albums.
Would you describe yourself as satisfied? Is that what it feels like?
I feel satisfied at times, but I'm not like, well, I feel like but I'm not content. If that makes sense, right? Like, still, like, I feel really, really, we achieved more than I ever dreamed of. You know, like I and like playing Madison Square Garden, that was like something I wanted to do so bad, but didn't even dare dream because I don't want to be so disappointed when it never happened, right? I was like, it's just never gonna happen. So don't even dream that one. So to sell that out it was ridiculous. And also playing like hometown show here in Nashville like a couple times now, that's like, I just never thought that would actually happen. And the things like the music festival, Seven Peaks, all that stuff. I mean, there's things that have happened that are beyond what I could have dreamed. If it ended now, it would be fine. But there's still like this crazy fire in me. Like, this last run was really hard, and I was totally fried after this Canadian, the Midwest run. And I was just like, needed a break so bad. But I was like watching my 10 and 8-year-old do like children's theater. And I just feel like that. It's like a shark smelling blood. I'm like, God, I cannot wait to get back out.
Like
the road,
you were
and, like,
jealous.
Do my thing. Like, I'm just like, it's such a cool. Yeah, like I appreciate what they're doing, but it's just like being on stage and getting to perform in front of people, and the experience is like, it's still really it's really fun for me. And I just so it's like, here I'm watching them. I'm thinking about, like, you know, Toledo, Ohio. I'm gonna come in so hot. I can't wait. I'm gonna destroy it. So it's still there, but yeah, I, you know, there's just a lot going on. You know, with family stuff too, so there's, I wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't like super super fun and right now for me, because, you know, I have these kids that are so fun to hang out with and do stuff with, and it's busy, weekends are busy, so it's definitely a sacrifice to get out there and do that. I wouldn't do it if I didn't still like really love it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your family life since you brought it up. You keep it pretty private. Why is that? Sips coffee.
Yeah,
trying private. To distract.
I just deleted Insta and Facebook and Twitter off my phone. I am definitely going major
you
dark
go through
right
such
now.
Phases.
I know, but that's the key to life. Variety in like everything you do, except relationships. That's actually frowned upon. But in everything else, I think variety is like the key, right? I mean, I think one of the reasons why I didn't do this podcast with you to begin with was because I think the major reason was because I wanted to have like an honest conversation.
Yeah.
And I was really into like not eating meat, not eating dairy, not drinking, saying no to using a flip phone. I was like way hardcore that period in my life. And I just wasn't really comfortable like talking about that with an album coming out and people like,
well, especially in country music,
me.
Right? It's like,
but
the
Karen,
opposite.
I told Karen Fair, we went to go see U2 play, and I was at this little after party, and Caleb Falwell was there from Kings of Leon, and the Little Big Town's there, who I love. And I wasn't drinking, you know, I was just, this was something I was trying last year, and I was kind of getting some shit for it. And then I was talking to Karen, and I said, oh yeah, I'm actually not eating meat either. And she starts laughing. She goes, you can't be a country singer and not eat meat.
Right. You're like not drinking, not eating meat.
I'm like,
that's more like an emo album, not country music.
No, but it was just something that's like, to do it this long, you have to like, for in life in general, you just have to like, you got to switch things up. I mean, I people ask what's your favorite venue to play. It's like, it's the variety. If I played like Madison Square Garden every night, it would get old after a couple, you know,
right.
It's just changing up. Never know what you're getting into. And I think like from a longevity standpoint and health standpoint, and not just like I want to be healthy, like going on stage and being optimal, like being giving my audience peak energy every night. I have to like vary up the insides as well as like what I do outside, right? So like this, you cannot eat the same food over and over again. It's just like our diet is so, you know, humans have been around for like, you know, 2 million years, Homo sapiens for 70,000 years. Up until like, you know, 6,000 years ago, we ate everything. Now we just eat like wheat. You know, it's right. Like you have to like find a way to vary up your food or else you're going to be, it's just not going to be a good situation. So, yeah, I was just trying some stuff last year, but this year it's like the exact opposite. It's like, I start off the year, like drinking heavily, eating anything, everything I want to, not working out, not getting up early, not doing the cold plunges, being back on my iPhone. And I was actually really happy for a little while, but I'm starting to kind of rein it back in a little bit, not with the food, but.
Try and balance.
The food thing is good because it taught me to just start eating a lot more vegetables in general. But actually this year I'm planning my deer hunt in the fall. So I'm going I'm on YouTube like,
what?
I'm going full opposite direction this year. It's amazing. Yeah. Full I'm totally embracing the Tennessee.
Does the band know about this?
Yeah, they do. Cause I'm like,
are they supportive?
Oh, totally. We're like such, our group is like such a homogenous group. It's crazy. Like when one person kind of started switching the diet, we all did, right?
I watch it happen. I try to practice
like a vegan, diet at least. And then I remember one night we were playing somewhere and I was so damn hungry and there they had these huge, like, I don't know what kind of, it was a huge bone with a piece of meat on the end of it, right? It wasn't turkey leg. It's like crazy, like buffalo rib or something. And I was like, I grabbed two of them, ran back the bus. I walked on there, but I didn't think anyone would be on there. And Cassie Feasby, our bass player, was gnawing on one. And he was like the most hardcore about the diet of any of us. I'm like, dude, he's like, I need protein. I'm like, me too. So we've all come off it. Now we're all back to eating meat and talking about, and yeah, we're going the exact opposite direction this year. But yeah, I'm like, I know my family grew up, my dad hunted birds and stuff, but by the time I was born, he was 50 and he was just over it. So I didn't have that like influence growing up, but I recently got some land out west of town and I'm like, just, you know, you're out there, you appreciate the land, you start appreciating the water and the animals and the lifestyle. It's like, I'm just getting really into that right now. So
I'm fascinated.
I was at the gun range yesterday.
What? I mean, if you guys only knew what last year looked like.
National Armory shooting a couple of pistols that I got.
I mean, you always keep us guessing. I'll give you that. I won't bring up gun control. That's a sensitive topic.
Oh gosh. I posted something for my friend and just trying to give a buddy of mine a little good on you for being passionate about something. And I still know what the fallout was. I know people like just freaked out. I hardly use Instagram at all. I mean, the way I'm using Instagram now, and I recommend this book to anybody, Digital Minimalism. It's a great book. But just, you know, it's your time is equals their money. And if you can find times in your life to kind of take a little break from it, you know, just do. For me, I'm talking to myself personally. I'm just so bad. When I'm on the road,
yeah,
you know what the road's like. You go out there, we just sit on our phones all day long.
Oh, yeah.
We're on them
all day long.
There's no living.
Right.
And when you're back here in Nashville, you have your life, your routines, your stuff. Okay, you can kind of like balance it. But when you're on the road, it's just kind of dark. You're away from family, away from friends. You're away from like nature. And then you're just on your phone all the time. So I had to like find a way to like kind of balance that on the road. So for me, it was like kind of taking off my phone, doing it on my computer. So I can kind of like, or my iPad.
Your texting device.
My iPad, my texting
That's
device.
That's what he calls it.
Yeah, this big iPad. It's like, okay, just to be a little more like intentional about it because I'm just bad on it out there. But anyway, so I don't know what the comments were. I don't look at that stuff, but yikes.
Not a good topic for country music.
Yeah, I mean, doing a shout out to my buddy Blake there for being passionate about kids and stuff and, you know, but.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go back to families since you've completely changed the topic.
I don't fit this day and age. I'm like, I don't do teams. I don't do politics.
That's probably smart, I would say.
Yeah, I'm not even independent because I'm an independent voter. I'm like, I'm not even that because that's like something. I don't want to be anyone's group.
Everybody, like, you do you. That's how I feel.
Yeah, you run your own race. My cast is a marathon runner. I'm always like, and that's like, we use that analogy for our kids, like run your own race. Run your race, I'll run mine.
Yeah.
Like, and let's have a common goal of getting to the end together.
But yeah.
That's not the world we live in now.
So speaking of Cass, I had a lot of questions when I asked my followers what they wanted to know. How did you guys meet?
We met in eighth grade. That's one of the questions.
Yeah, that was one.
Me band practice yesterday. You were.
I mean, they submitted some really interesting questions, but they might not get asked because my mom would be really upset.
Oh my gosh, that's funny. We met in eighth grade. We both went to public school. School called Ingleside. It was like this big school. I want to say it was like 400 kids in the. It was either 400 kids in eighth grade or 400 kids in seventh and eighth grade. But liked her a lot then, you know?
Yeah. And she's cute.
She was dating one of my friends. I was dating one of her friends. We all kind of did a lot of double dating together. And
that's really funny.
Kind of was, yeah. And I liked the girl that I was dating at the time, but I also kind of liked Cass. I think I came back for a few weddings and stuff. So, you know, we just kind of started, we started dating when we were like 17, I guess. We started dating a little bit, but, and obviously left for school and for Nashville, and we just kind of dated here and there. Never could find the right time to make it work. And then I was playing a show for opening for George Strait, February 2005, in Las Vegas. And she came out to the show, and I thought she was kind of coming out as a friend. And I was like, "Yeah, come out. I'll be on the bus." And she came on the bus. I was in the back of the bus watching Old School for like the 100 millionth time.
Yeah,
like
good movie.
Yeah, because I don't have Instagram, so I had to do something else. That's like, I guess Instagram's actually better than just watching the same like Will Ferrell movies over and over again. At least you're maybe learning something. But and then she came out, and I was like, wow, the moment she walked on the bus is like right, because you always hear like right time, right person, right place, has to be all three. And it was like, this is, feels like it's all three. And we eloped at the end of that year. It was fun. We met in Las Vegas, and then we got engaged in Las Vegas in December. So it was like within a year.
And then three days later,
went to Mexico and got married.
So you just say, you've told me before when she came on the bus and you were like, I'm going to marry that girl.
Yeah, I knew right away.
How did you know?
It's like hearing country music for the first time, hearing like Hank Jr. It's the same.
Clicked.
In that moment, just being like, wow, I, this is like so clear.
Because, okay, I'm bringing up the kind of broken engagement type thing because we have that in common.
Yeah.
So you had tried before, and that obviously in those moments you would know, right?
With the girl before I tried to marry?
Yeah.
Yeah. I tried to marry someone once before. It didn't work out so well. But
but so then what was different with Cass?
Well, that was just like, well, I don't want to say maturity because I was not any much more mature. But the first time around was more like out of desperation. I was just like trying to make this relationship work. And I was trying to solve a lot of problems with that, which is a terrible reason to get married.
Bad idea,
and thank God she kind of recognized that. With Cass, something just clicked. I don't know what it was. I think, you know, being on the road for some of us, you know, you see why there's so many young artists that get married right now. Like Luke Combs is getting married, and
all the Lanco boys
Kelsey
are Ballerini
married. Is married, and Marin is married, and all but like, you know, TR and FGL guys. I mean, they like all got married really young. People in the industry are like, why are you getting married? So you like stay single, you keep grinding, keep working, having fun. It's like, it just gets kind of lonely out there. You have no one to share any of your ups or downs with. It's like you have no one to like, you know, you go to an award show and you don't have anyone to share that experience with, or all these amazing things that are happening in your life for the first time. It's like, no one's like, they really talk to him about with. So, something about her, that moment was just like, yeah. And then got the marriage train rolling. I definitely tried to tap the brakes a few times. I'm like, whoa, okay, this is working better than I expected. Like, this is really going fast. You're moving to Nashville.
Yeah. So it was like your idea, and then you were like, oh shit.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like, and honestly, it probably took me like 8 years to like recover, to musically kind of get back on track. Cause I feel like everything I'd done was like geared towards this like single guy on the road, you know, it's known as like the hardest working guy in country music. We did like 41 shows in 45 days one time. I mean,
oh my God.
26 in a row. I was just working nonstop, loved the road, loved the bus, loved the lifestyle. That's kind of who I was. And that train, that's like, you know, it's like a train building up momentum. It's going faster and faster and faster and faster. This is your guy. I never use like the term brands and all that stuff, but you're kind of creating your own lane, right? And like there's more heat and you're nominated for stuff and things are happening. And then you get married and it just felt like, as a songwriter, I'm like, an identity. I didn't know. It's like, I got to find this. I don't know who this person is.
Yeah, what do you write about now?
Who am I? You know, and then when it starts coming out, you're like, oh, you're going to write songs about being married. You're everyone just looks at you differently, and even though you kind of feel the same. And so it's almost like you have to stop that train, which takes a long time to do, and like back it into the station and go start up a whole new one. That's the way I really feel like it was for me. And I don't think because then you're trying to go back and sing songs about the single days that but doesn't resonate with me.
Cause right. I'm
like, that's not who I am now. And I really feel like for me, it wasn't until like 2000 and the Bluegrass record was a departure in 2010. Home was kind of an attempt in that direction for sure. And then I feel like with Riser in 2012 was probably like, okay.
Kind of started coming back
around. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And me embracing this whole life, embracing all there is to write about from that standpoint. I mean, so much more to write about for me after I've done all the other stuff, the heartbreak stuff, like being married and everything that goes along with that, and certainly having kids, a lot of dirty, you don't have to sing songs about kids, but they teach you so much more have taught me at least so much more about life. And I just find I could write deeper and better songs and really just not be afraid to go there and embrace that. I think there's also some fear that you're going to alienate.
Totally. Yeah. Or something. It's a hard business to have a serious relationship in, I would say. I always think that about, I actually think, yeah, I might do a podcast with Cass just talking about what it's like from her perspective. Cause your career is kind of you have to navigate through that with your whole entire family.
Oh, totally. A wife's podcast would be interesting. I could never do what she did. I would, be on the road and just, the parties we have after the show,
right,
and stuff, or, it's nothing's not doing anything wrong, not doing anything right either, but I wasn't doing anything wrong, but it's just like, why are we having, why are you doing this? Why are you, for me, it's like, hey, it's Saturday. These regular people get a Thursday, Friday, they get their weekends. I don't get a weekend. I don't get to go to the local bar. And so we create a bar, we have we have fun and hang and I would be the worst. I'd be so jealous. I could never handle that at all.
Oh my God, you would never be.
I would
to.
Like, yeah, she's gone for like a night. I'm like, where are you?
What,
are you
doing? What time are you going to be home?
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of growing, a lot of me having to grow up. Cass has been so amazing how she's like pulled me through every like major man life hurdle. I think like this day and age it's so much harder now to do what you're supposed to do as a guy because of the phone. I mean, there's just everything he wants at your fingertips. It's just like, why would you take these bigger steps when like you really don't have to? It's just like, I'll just go to my phone and hit up one of these social like dating apps and stuff. So for me, like the marriage thing was big, but then like helped me kind of really adjust to that. And then having a kid, it's like I think of myself as wanting a kid, but do I really want one? That's a lot of like, or even getting a second dog was Gas's idea. And then that kind of helped me along. She's giving me the stepping stones, and having a kid, thank God we had, she pulled me along and made that happen. And the second one and talking about the third one, it's like, these are not my, these are not things I was leading the charge on, but once she kind of pulled me through them, I'm so thankful she, had the wisdom that women have to do that. Cause I'm so, I would hate, it would have missed out on a lot, obviously, say the least. So I don't even know what the hell we're talking about here.
Well, right now you have three kids.
It feels like 1,000.
Well, cause you have three dogs. Is that right? Three? Yeah.
Three dogs and three kids.
There's a lot going on here.
There's a lot. And we're all sleeping in one room.
This situation blows my mind.
The wolf den.
Why?
As a parent, there's no blueprint. And, you think when you have kids, you're like, and I'd say this to any new parents out there, they're listening. It's like, they need to be in the room and they're regimented, And a lot of it was like for Cass, when Evie was born, it was like, we just want some time to be alone, drink some wine at the end of the
night.
You go to bed. We had on a pretty good schedule, You did this book called Baby Wise that like has the scheduling mapped out. And okay, and like 7:30, like be in your room, go to F to sleep so we can like hang for a little bit here.
Right.
And she'd be screaming and, she hated being in that room. I had to reverse the locks on her door so she couldn't get out. She'd be like staring with one eye under the door, like screaming,
God.
And like,
so it's heartbreaking.
That didn't work. I know. Well, I found it later on. Maybe hates being alone. Like, I didn't know that at the time. But really, right now, it's just, there's so many moving parts at night. It was just like, they usually come in our room anyway. So we just kind of like threw mattresses on the floor. And I was reading this book. What's the last book I just read? Crap. It's called Go Wild. Great book. But you know, we're the only country in the world. Like, the majority of the world, everyone sleeps in one room. They have a sleeping room. Oh, yeah. Like, they would think it's like child abuse to make a kid sleep in a room by themselves. Yeah, it's just so unnatural. For the millennia that we've been around, we all slept around a campfire. Before fire, we were all just kind of near each other for safety. You know, it's like, you know, someone was always up. Like, the older people would be up later, kind of watching the group, the camps, the tents, whatever. And then these people get up really early in the middle of the night or something. Someone gets up early in the morning. There's always someone awake around. It's how you sleep well, knowing that, like, you get to know the sounds of the fire or the animals, the, you know, people sleeping nearby you, and it's what makes you feel safe. Throw a kid in a room by themselves. For some kids, it's a really terrifying experience. So we're just like, now the kid's a little older, but they're still enjoying it. It's like, everyone's got a mattress on the floor. Bedroom looks like hell, but everyone's sleeping good, which is the only thing that really matters. And it kind of makes sense to me right now. Just kind of calling it the wolf pack.
The wolf den.
The wolf den, yeah, wolf den.
Was it different for you because you have two girls and then Knox came along? And we've obviously been spending a lot of time with Knox. We just filmed the living video.
Yeah,
it's going to be so cute.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So anyway, what was there any difference like with having a boy? Did that change you in any different way?
You know, I think most guys out there probably want a boy for the first kid because that's all they really know. And then if you're lucky, you get a girl. And, you know, Evie just totally changed the shape of my heart. She just, like, it's she's just amazing, you know. She's just what she did to me. And then have another girl. I want another girl after Evie because I wanted them to have sisters, because my wife has a sister, and that's a unique bond. The third one, I was kind of like, yeah, all right, we're gonna get a boy here. And it's definitely, I mean, he's like such a mini me. I got so lucky with Knox. He just loves everything I love, and he's a total comedian, and he's also really kind too. I think having older sisters has taught him a lot about, like, being a nice person. But yeah, it's, you know, I think when you talk about, you know, I talk about some of this food stuff I try, or the ice baths, the plunges, or exercise stuff. A lot of it's about obviously wanting to feel now and feel great in the present moment, but planning, you know, how I want to look and feel 10 years down the road when Knox is 14, when Jordan's 18 and Evie's 20, like, I want to be able to hang in there with him and be active. But certainly with Knox, yeah,
Super active.
Yeah, he loves hockey. We play hockey together. He plays hockey. I stopped playing hockey because he plays more than I do now. He's only five, and he's there three times a week. And he's a great skier. He and I just went to Colorado together, just the two of us. It was awesome. He'd go to ski school, I'd ski, then we'd come back. He'd get a Sprite, I'd get a few beers and some food, and go home and watch Star Wars and do it all over again. It was like, he's like, kind of like my, you know, as far as my male friends go, he's my best friend. So we have a unique relationship. So he calls me his brother because we're not having any more kids. So I was like, I will be your brother. Yeah. I will do all the dumb stuff with you. And so he calls me brother.
Were you like that with your dad? Because you guys were really close,
right? My dad was older. So my dad had two kids before me with his first wife, and she had brain cancer and she passed away. So he remarried my mom, and so he had me when he was 50, and they're 20 years apart, and my brother when he was 60. So he wasn't that, by he did stuff with me. I mean, he taught me a lot of mechanics, working on like lawnmowers and just how to drive boats and cars and stuff, but he wasn't as physical as I am with Knox. You know, Knox and I fight daily.
Like, oh, yeah.
But my brother, who's 10 years younger than me, I feel like the relationship I have with Knox is a lot like the one I had with my brother five, because I was 10 years older than him and we did everything together. And I still feel like I'm, you know, a teenager. You know, most of my, you know,
yeah,
a lot. Well, I either feel like I'm a teenager, or I feel like I'm like 80 years old. That's like that's I never feel
depending
I never feel
on what you're doing
my age. And I'm always like either feeling really young on stage or playing with Knox, or I feel like it's incredibly exhausted.
What is that like? I think about you a lot because you're very hands-on with your kids, and you can go play these huge venues, and literally you walk off the stage, let's say, I don't know, wherever you are, you come home and they don't give a shit that you're Dierks Bentley.
No.
Like, it doesn't matter at all to them.
Doesn't matter at all. No.
How do you make that transition?
It's the best, though. I mean, really, it's the thing anyone would tell you, that it's like having that waiting for you at home is like the best. Like, you can just come home and be like, and I work really hard to maintain that as far as like the way the house looks and stuff I have lying around. There's a lot of guitars, not too many guitars. There's guitars and mandolins lying around and stuff, but there's no like pictures of me on gold records or anything, you know. It's right. Like, I don't want them. I want them to treat me like, you know, I don't want them to treat me like crap, which they can do sometimes. No, but no, I just want them to like just be known as dad. And, you know, I've trained them to like, they won't leave me alone. I mean, they know I'm like Mr. Activity guy. So it's like the backyard, like dad, you know, let's go play, you know, hockey. Let's go play basketball. Right. Let's go. They're just, I'm kind of like their big, like, I feel like I'm like a camp counselor more than I am like anything else with these guys. And, but I'm trying to be pretty, trying to do the best I can. There's no blueprint for this shit. So you're just like, how do you, you know, raise kind, nice, compassionate kids and try to help them, you know, find whatever they're interested in. So
is that the most important thing for you to teach them, you think?
I think, yeah, I think them to have like, you know, just, yeah, compassion, looking for the truth in every situation, and being, you know, yeah, being nice, respectful, and you know, when needed. You know, Jordan's very vocal. And, you know, as girls, we teach them to be like, you know, be vocal and say what you want and go after what you want to do, and in that regard. And but yeah, just I think being compassionate is huge, especially considering they're my kids and they're really fortunate.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
I hope you guys are enjoying the Dirks conversation just as much as I did. I did ask a lot of the questions that you guys sent in to Velvet's Edge on my Instagram, and he answered. I swear you guys are perverts, though, because every time I ask what you guys want to know from a guy, y'all ask what his favorite sexual position is. So, of course, I'm here for the people, so I ask. So we did a bunch of rapid-fire questions, found out what's next on the horizon for him, and I asked the one question I've always wanted to ask him. So listen next week on the Velvet's Edge podcast with more Dirks Bentley.